Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, Emily Bazelon from Slate with binders full of political analysis and her take as a legal writer about a federal court ruling against the Defense of Marriage Act yesterday. Also today, Ralph Nader with his thoughts on what to do about Citizens United after this election year and why he's not running for president in 2012 for the first time in 24 years. WNYC's Bob Henley looks at the meaning of the alleged plot to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank in Lower Manhattan and Mayor Bloomberg starting an anti-gun super PAC just weeks before the election. And we continue our fall arts and entertainment preview series today with none other than John Schaefer from Soundcheck with fall season music picks. And we'll get to Emily Bazelon in just 60 seconds. Let me just do a little of my duty here first and remind you that this is day two of our – this is actually day – let's see. What is it? It's well, we are in our fall membership drive. And we hope that everyone who listens to WNYC on a very regular basis, day four, will help us to pay to run the place. And if that list of very regular listeners includes you and you haven't done it on days one through three, please call 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. We'll talk more about it later, but I just wanted to reinforce that Pledge Week is underway and ask you to please come through with something, maybe $5 or $10 a month to help us pay the bills while you're listening to the show today. Thanks a lot for considering it at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. And thanks a lot. So you might say the Catholic Church went one and one in politics yesterday, better than the Yankees. They must have been jeering as a federal court struck a blow to the Defense of Marriage Act, but they got both presidential candidates to come and tell jokes at a dinner in New York.
In less than 3 weeks, voters in states like Ohio, Virginia, and Florida will decide this incredibly important election, which begs the question, what are we doing here? Of course, New Yorkers also have a big choice to make. You have to decide which one of us you want holding up traffic for the next 4 years.
People seem to be very curious as to how we prepare for the debates. Let me tell you what I do. First, refrain from alcohol for 65 years before the debate. Second, find the biggest available straw man and then just mercilessly attack it. Big Bird didn't even see it coming.
So you'd have thought it was Jack Benny and Henny Youngman reincarnate, or maybe more like Dennis Miller and Al Franken.
I'm still making the most of my time in the city. Earlier today, I went shopping at some stores in Midtown. I understand Governor Romney went shopping for some stores in Midtown.
And I've already seen early reports from tonight's dinner. Headline, Obama embraced by Catholics. Romney dines with rich people.
So let's talk politics, law, and Catholic dinner comedy with Emily Bazelon, senior editor at Slate, and a panelist on their weekly Politics Gab Fest, heard Sunday evenings here on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Brian.
So were you keeping score last night as their routines aired on TV? Was there a winner in the stand-up debate?
I think the trick in these debates is to take some shots at the other candidate, but in kind of a lighthearted way so that you don't seem too mean. And, you know, apparently at one point Obama was making fun of Romney for the gaffes that when he showed up in London for the Olympics. And he, like, made eye contact, and they kind of smiled at each other across the room. Just as a sort of human moment, that was a nice thing to see.
Okay, America. And listeners, if you want to vote on our website, you can. We have a comments page for this segment, and you can vote whose jokes you would rather hear for the next 4 years. Would you rather hear jokes like this?
Now, Al, you are right. A campaign can require a lot of wardrobe changes. Blue jeans in the morning, perhaps, suit for a lunch fundraiser, sport coat for dinner, but it's nice to finally relax and to wear what Ann and I wear around the house.
at their Tuxedos Only dinner. So would you rather hear jokes like that for the next 4 years or jokes like this?
As some of you may have noticed, I had a lot more energy in our second debate. I felt really well rested after the nice long nap I had in the first debate.
So Emily Bazelon from Slate, except for that last line, this may be politically incorrect in New York, but I think Romney was funnier.
Is Romney's funny moments come from a real class divide that he is admitting that he's aligning himself, right? I mean, the one about rich people dining with rich people, about wearing white tie feeling very natural to him, those are kind of truths about him and
yes.
his right? And so we have to decide whether we want a super wealthy person in this office.
Yeah, and is it possible on the other side, on the other hand, that it continues to humanize Romney to swing voters, which is actually a serious crux of his end-stage campaign?
It's possible, but it also seems a little risky to me because he's reminding people of this central truth about his life, which is problematic in terms of identifying with the majority of Americans.
Now, this binders full of women meme, is this fair to Romney? Kind of like his joke about the media coverage, not to support or oppose the guy's policies or not. He all he said really was that he did outreach to get more women's resumes to have a diverse cabinet. And that story turns out to maybe not be true, so that's one problem, but he's getting killed just for the way he used that term.
Right. I mean, the phrasing was awkward. I don't think it matters that much. He should, I mean, it does because we're all obsessed with it and it's funny, but he should get credit for all the hires he made of women in Massachusetts, although that apparently diminished in the later part of his term. I think it's a problem, though, that apparently he didn't actually reach out and ask for these binders of applications. In fact, they were ready to go for whichever candidate won the governor's race in Massachusetts.
Right. In fact, we have a clip of Jesse Merman, the executive director of the Massachusetts Women's Political Caucus, which ran the group called Mass Gap from 2004 to 2008, which is the group that apparently put these binders of resumes together. So here she is talking yesterday.
I went to a number of women's...
Sorry. So this is, just so people know the context, we can play that same one. This is the original Romney statement. And listen, not so much to the binders full of women words, but the way he starts this.
I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
But yesterday there was this correction. Listen.
MassGap was a bipartisan coalition founded in 2002 to address the issue of the fact that we don't have enough women in leadership positions in government. In September of 2002, MassGap approached both gubernatorial candidates, Shannon O'Brien and now Governor Mitt Romney, to bring up this issue and request that they consider and commit to working with MassGap and really to make an honest effort to put women in leadership positions.
So her point is that his story was not true, at least as she tells it. He didn't get elected, get only male resumes from his advisors, and then say, go diversify this resume base. The binders were given to them during the campaign, he and his opponent for governor, as a tactic by women's groups to make sure that there would be diversity. So I don't know if this is landing with anybody. Do you think this matters to swing voter women, hearing this back and forth?
Listening to it is whether there's something just like a little old-fashioned and out of touch in the way Romney tends to try to appeal to women. The other part of his debate effort was to talk about how he bent over backwards so that his female chief of staff could go home and have dinner with her kids. And maybe that's great, but there's no acknowledgement of the idea that this is like a more general issue for families and that men in the workplace might also want to have that kind of ability to go home. It's all about kind of this old idea that women are the ones doing all of this juggling and need this kind of special treatment.
And I guess that it could be up to individual CEOs. So the question that was asked at the debate was, would you support things like the Lilly Ledbetter Act for equal pay for women structurally? And He didn't really say that he would. He said, oh, when I was a CEO, I made sure we had women in my cabinet.
That's right. And, you know, the Lilly Ledbetter Act has some reach in terms of preventing pay discrimination, and it's an important piece of legislation for President Obama. It's not a panacea that addresses all the problems women have in the workplace. But Romney is only offering up these kind of private, trust-your-boss solutions. It's not like he has some other piece of legislation he is promoting.
And with the Romneys, I guess it sometimes doesn't matter whether their policies are good. They can just sound so out of touch with most people, like what you were pointing out regarding his comedy routine. So Binders Full of Women is an example. Another one we noted during the convention, and this was even scripted, was this line during Ann Romney's speech, which was almost entirely aimed at women.
I love you, women!
Now, if you're a working-class swing voting woman, it makes her sound like she's looking at you from the outside. I love you, women, not like one of us.
Right. And also her whole portrayal of the American family and her own family in that speech was all about being part of a very stable married couple where the woman is doing some things outside the house, but largely responsible for raising the kids. And there's really no recognition in that whole construct of how many women are on their own working and raising their kids. The, you know, number of single women in this country has grown a lot, and those people are somewhat up for grabs in this election. And the Romneys don't directly address them because the policies they're offering don't really have much for those kinds of women.
Emily Bazelon from Slate and the Slate Political Gab Fest, which airs Sunday evenings on WNYC. All right, one more topic. You're also a court watcher for Slate. You've been on here many times talking about the Supreme Court. And the so-called Defense of Marriage Act got dealt another blow in a federal appeals court in New York yesterday. Why was this significant?
This is a big deal because it kind of fast-tracks the possibility that one or more of these same-sex marriage cases are going to land at the Supreme Court this year. So we have a woman named Edie Windsor who was married in Canada to a woman, and then this woman died and she was widowed, and the question was, would she have to pay more than $300,000 in federal income tax? Now, if the federal government recognized her as married, she would not have to pay, but under the Defense of Marriage Act, part of that law, which Congress passed in the 90s, the federal government does not recognize same-sex marriages, even if they're legal in the state where someone lives. And so this is sort of the perfect incremental challenge that the gay rights movement has been teeing up for taking one step to gay marriage, because you could have a ruling on Edie Windsor's behalf, but it would only apply in states that have already themselves legalized gay marriage. It would not impose gay marriage on all the states that have not made that move themselves.
By the way, this just in from our corrections department, the Slate Political Gab Fest airs not only Sunday nights at 6, but also Saturday mornings at 7 on AM 820 WNYC. So, Emily, I'm sorry to leave that out. You probably have more listeners on Saturday mornings, actually. So that's the primary air. Related to this, I saw your feature on Slate this week called Boss Emily Bazelon Around, in which readers got to vote for which classic Supreme Court case you should write about. And they chose, at least if I read it right, they chose Bowers versus Hardwick, which you described as the one about sodomy. That's relevant to this case, right?
Absolutely. And I have to finish that piece as soon as I finish talking with you. Bowers versus Hardwick is one of the most wrong turns that the Supreme Court has ever taken. It's the 1986 decision in which five members of the court said that it was okay for Georgia to continue to criminalize sodomy, and that these gay men who had challenged the law after being arrested did not have a right to privacy, even though they were both consenting adults having sex in their own home.
Is this headed quickly now, the Defense of Marriage Act, to the Supreme Court?
That's my guess. Justice Ginsburg a few weeks ago declined to answer a question about gay marriage and said she thought it was likely that the Supreme Court would take a case later this term. And so if you look at the briefing schedule, you can see later in November the last briefs are due in a round of these same-sex marriage cases. And it seems very possible that the Supreme Court will take a case. I have to say, it will make the term so interesting that I can't tell if I'm predicting that this will happen or just desperately hoping that it will.
Somebody very attached to her job, Emily Bazelon, who you can hear on Saturday mornings at 7, did you hear that? And Sunday evenings at 6 on AMA 20 as part of the Slate Political Gab Fest with, is it always David Plotz and John Dickerson with you?
It is.
You guys are great. So I'll be listening, and now I know I can listen Saturday mornings. It's actually, I listen on the podcast, but there it is. It's on the radio, too, now. And Emily Bazelon, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, our own Bob Henley looks at the meaning of the alleged plot to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank in Lower Manhattan and at Mayor Bloomberg starting an anti-gun super PAC just weeks before Election Day. Stay with us.